I spent the rest of the day going round from place to place, renewing past associations, and reading all the news. I rested snug and secure on a branch of my old friend the apple tree. Supper was the usual scraps, of good quality, but still scraps. Thought how perfectly wonderful it would be to have something bought specially for me instead of always having leavings. With the coming of dusk, Gaston came in search of me, and having found me, snatched me off the ground and hurried to the outhouse with me. Wrenching open the door, he flung me into the dark interior, slammed the door behind him, and departed. Being French myself, I am very greatly pained to admit that French humans are very hard indeed on animals. Day ran into day and merged into weeks. I assumed a matronly figure and became slower in my movements. One night, when I was almost at full term, I was roughly thrown into the outhouse by Pierre. As I landed on the hard concrete floor, I felt a terrible pain, as if I was splitting, painfully, in the darkness of that cold outhouse. My five babies were born. When I had recovered a little, I shredded some paper and made a warm nest for them, then carried them one by one to it. Next day no one came to see me. The day dragged on, but I was still busy feeding my babies. Night found me faint with hunger and absolutely parched, for there was neither food nor water in the outhouse. The following day brought no relief. No one came, and the hours dragged and dragged. Thirst was almost unbearable, and I wondered why I should have to suffer so. Full the owls swooped and hooted about the mice they had caught. I and my kittens lay together, and I wondered how I would live through the next day. Well advanced when I heard footsteps. The door was opened, and there stood Madame Albertine, looking pale and ill. She had got specially from her bed, as she had had visions of me in trouble. As was her wont, she had brought food and water. One of my babies had died during the night, and Madame Albertine was almost too furious to speak. Her fury was so great at the manner in which I had been treated that she went and brought me. Monsieur le Duc's sorrow was at the loss of one kitten, and the loss of money which that meant. The Duc managed a sickly smile and said, "Perhaps we can do something about it. Someone should speak to Pierre." Lee, my children grew stronger. Gradually they opened their eyes. Will came to see them. Money changed hands, and almost before they were weaned they were taken from me. Olable around the estate. My lamentations disturbed me. Diplomat, and she ordered me to be shut up until I was quiet. And now I was used to being shown off at social gatherings, and thought nothing of being taken from my work in the gardens in order to parade through the salon. One day it was different. Taken to a small room where me, Diplomat, sat writing at a desk, and a strange man sat opposite her. He exclaimed as I was brought into the room, "So this is the cat?" In silence he examined me, screwed up his face and played with one of his ears. "Is somewhat neglected. To drug her so that she can be carried as luggage aboard a plane will undermine her constitution." Scowled angrily at him. "I am not asking you for a lecture, Mr. the Veterinarian," she said. "If you will not do as I ask, many more will." Gracious, expostulated in fury. "What a fuss about a mere cat!" And shrugged his shoulders helplessly. "Very well, madame," he replied, "I will do as you wish, for I have my living to earn. Boil me an hour or so before you are due to board the plane." To his feet, groped about for his case, and blundered out of the room. Opened the French windows and chased me into the garden. An air of suppressed excitement about the house. Great cases are being dusted and cleaned, and Monsieur le Duc's new rank was being painted on them. A carpenter was called and told to make a wooden traveling box which would fit inside a case and capable of holding a cat. And fluttered around looking as if she hoped me drop dead. One morning, about a week later, Gaston came to the outhouse for me and took me to the garage without giving me any breakfast. Him I was hungry, but as usual he did not understand. May, Yvette, was waiting in the citron. Gaston put me in a wicker basket with a strapped top, and I was lifted onto the back seat. "Very fast rate. I don't know why she wants the cat drugged," said Yvette. "The regulations say that a cat may be taken into the USA without any difficulties." "Or," said Gaston, "that woman is crazy." I have given up trying to guess what makes her tick. They relapsed into silence and concentrated on driving faster and faster. The jouncing was terrible. My small weight was not enough to press down the seat springs, and I was becoming more and more bruised from hitting the sides and top of the basket. I concentrated on keeping my legs outstretched, and sank my Klaus into the basket. Truly it was a grim battle to prevent myself from being knocked unconscious. All count of time. Eventually we skidded to a screaming stop, and grabbed my basket and rushed up some steps and into a house. The basket was plonked onto a table and the lid removed. Hans lifted me and set me down on the table. Immediately I fell over. My legs would no longer support me. I had been tensed too long. Looked at me in horror and compassion. "Have killed this cat," he exclaimed angrily to Gaston. "I cannot give her an injection today." Face flamed with anger. "Drug the cat. The plane leaves today. You have been paid, haven't you?" "The telephone." "No use in you phoning," said Gaston. "The family are at Le Bourget Airport, and I'm in a hurry." Sighing, Mr. the veterinarian picked up a big syringe and turned to me. Up and painful stab deep within my muscles, and the whole world turned blood red, then black. Faintly I heard a voice say, "Or keep her quiet." For oblivion complete and utter descended upon me. Full roaring, I was cold and miserable, and breathing was a shocking effort. Not a gleam of light anywhere. I had never known such darkness. I had gone blind. My head was splitting. Never before had I felt so ill, so neglected, and so miserable. I after rather horrid roaring continued. I thought my brain would burst. Came strange pressures to my ears and things inside them went click and pop. The roaring changed, becoming fiercer, then there was a jarring clang and I was thrown violently to the top of my box. Another jar, and another, and the roaring subsided. Now there came a strange rumbling, like the wheels of a fast car on a concrete highway. Ducks and rumbles, and then the roaring died. Other noises took over, the scraping of metal, muffled voices, and a chug-chug directly beneath me. With a shattering crash a great metal door opened beside me, and strange men came clattering into the compartment where I was. Hans grabbed cases and threw them onto a moving belt which conveyed them out of sight. Then came my turn. I sailed through the air and landed with a bone-jarring thud. Something went rumble rumble swish swish. A bang. And my journey stopped. I lay on my back and saw a dawn sky through some air holes. "Is he's a cat?" said a strange voice. "Okay, but it's not our worry," replied another man. Unceremoniously my case was grabbed and thrown onto some sort of vehicle. Other cases were piled around and on top, and the motor thing started off with a rumph 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 noise. The pain and the shock, I lost consciousness. Opened my eyes and found that I was gazing at a naked electric light bulb. Gazing through wire netting. Weakly I struggled to my feet and tottered to a dish of water which I saw nearby. Too much strain to drink, almost too much trouble to go on living, but having drunk I felt the better for it. Easing voice, "So you is awake." And there was a little old black man opening a tin of food. "Yours, ma'am," he said. "Yun me, we both got black faces. I guess I look after you good, eh?" He slipped the food in and I managed a weak purr to show that I appreciated his kindness. Stroked my head. "Gee, ain't dat somepin'? Just wait till I tell Sadie, man of man." To be able to eat again was wonderful. Too much because I felt terrible, but I made an attempt so that the black man should not feel insulted. Then I had another peck and a drink, and after that I felt sleepy. Bug in the corner, so I curled up on it and went to sleep. Actually I found that I was in an hotel. People kept coming down to the basement to see me. "Isn't she cute?" said the girl servants. "Wow, just look at those eyes, man. Are they beautiful?" said the men. One visitor was very welcome, a French chef. One of my admirers called through a telephone, "Hey, Francois, come down here, we have a French Siamese cat." Minutes later a fat man waddled down the corridor. "You have a news each at Francois, no?" he said to the men standing around. I purred louder and louder. It was quite a link with France to see him. And peered short-sightedly and then burst into a torrent of Parisian French, and yelled at him that I understood him perfectly. "Say, eh," at a hushed voice, "what you know? Toi and the cat sure are hitting it off together on all cylinders." The black man opened my cage door and I leapt straight into Francois' arms. He kissed me and I gave him some of my very best licks. And when I was put in the cage again he had tears in his eyes. Said my black attendant, "You sure have made a hit. Guess you eat pretty good now." I liked my attendant. Like me he had a black face. Pleasant things did not last for me. 2 days later we moved to another city in the USA and I was kept in an underground cellar for almost the whole of my time. For the next several years life was the same day after day, month after month, to produce kittens which were taken from me almost before I had them weaned. A Sieur Leduc was recalled to France. Once again I was drugged and knew no more until I awakened, sick and ill, at Le Bourget. Homecoming, to which I had looked with avid pleasure, was instead a sad affair. But there, she had died a few months before we returned. The old apple tree had been cut down and much remodeling of the house had taken place. For some months I wandered disconsolately around, bringing a few families into the world and seeing them taken from me before I was ready. Health began to fail and more kittens were born dead. My sight became uncertain, and I learned to sense my way round. Never did I forget that Tong Fa had been killed because he was old and blind. He had been back from America for almost 2 years. Me had wanted to go to Era to see if it was a suitable place for her to live. The fixed idea that I had brought her luck, although she was no kinder to me for it. I had to go to Era as well. I was taken to a place where I was drugged, and for a time life ceased to exist for me. Much later I woke up in a cloth-lined box in a strange house. There was a constant drone of aircraft in the sky. The smell of burning peat tickled my nostrils and made me sneeze. Voice. Where was I? Panic struck me, but I was too weak to move. Only later, through hearing the talk of humans, and through being told by an airport cat, did I get the story. The plane had landed on the Irish airport. Men had removed the luggage from the luggage compartment. "Paddy, there's an old dead cat in here," said one of the men. The foreman moved to look. "Inspector," he said. A man talked into his walkie-talkie and soon an inspector from the animal department came on the scene. "Opened," and I was gently lifted out. "Get the owner," said the inspector. While waiting he examined me. Diplomat walked angrily over to the little group about me, starting to bluster and tell how important she was. She was soon cut short by the inspector. "Dead," he said, "killed by vicious cruelty and neglect and kitten, and you have drugged her with a view to evading quarantine. This is a serious offense." Started to weep, saying that it would affect her husband's career if she were prosecuted for such an offense. The inspector pulled at his bottom lip, then, on a sudden decision, said, "The animal is dead. Sign a waiver that we may dispose of the body and we will say no more about it this time. But I advise you not to keep cats again." But paper and walked off sniffing. "Right, Brian," said the inspector, "get rid of the body." Walked away and one of the men lifted me into the box again and carried me off. Very vaguely I heard the sound of earth being turned, the clink of metal on stone as perhaps a shovel scraped against an obstruction. Then I was lifted, and faintly heard, "Glory be, I've." With that my consciousness faded again. Man, so I was told, looked about him surreptitiously, then, assured that he was unobserved, filled in the grave that he had dug for me, and hurried with me to a nearby house. "Nothing else was known to me until she is awake," said a broad Irish voice. Gentle hands stroked me. Someone wet my lips with water. "Sean," said the Irish voice, "this cat is blind. I have been waving the light in front of her eyes and she does not see it." Terrified, thinking they would kill me because of my age and sightlessness. "Blind?" said Sean. "Sure, 'tis a lovely creature she is. I'll go and see the supervisor and get the rest of the day off." "Sure, and I'll be after taking her to my mother. She will look after her. We can't keep her here." There was the sound of a door opening and closing. Hands held food just beneath my mouth and being famished, I ate. Pain inside me was terrible and I thought I would soon die on completely. Later, when I lived with the Lama, he spent much money to see what could be done. But it was then discovered that my optic nerves had been severed by the banging about that I had had. "Posed well?" asked Sir. "I felt upset that one of God's creatures should be treated so," he said. "Oh, sure, Sean, you always were a one to feel such things. Yes, take time off." "So here I am. How is she doing?" So-so," answered his wife. "I wet her lips and she had a bite of fish. Recover, but she has had a terrible time." "Some food, Mary, and I will take the cat off to mother." "I'll go out now and look to meet tires," I sighed. "More traveling," I wondered. The pain within me was a dull throbbing ache. And me there was the clatter of dishes, and the sound of a fire being raked. Presently the woman went to the door and called, "Tea, Sean, the kettle is on the boil." Sean came in and I heard him wash his hands before settling down to his meal. "We have got to keep this quiet," said Sean, "or we shall have the Garda after us. If we can get her well, her kittens will bring us money. These creatures are valuable, you know." His wife poured another cup of tea before answering, "Your mother knows all about cats. She will bring this one round if anyone will. Get yourself gone before the others come off work."
"Aye, that I will," said Sean as he pushed back his chair noisily and rose to his feet. They came over to me and I felt my box being lifted.
"You can't put the box on the carrier, Sean," said the woman. "Keep it under your arm. I will fix a sling so that you can take the weight across your shoulders. Not that she has much weight, poor little soul."
Trap across his shoulders and around my box, turned and left the house. The cool Irish air wafted wonderfully into my box, carrying an invigorating tang of the sea. It made me feel much better. If only the dreadful pain would go away. A ride on a bicycle was an absolutely new experience to me. A gentle breeze came through the air holes and there was a slight swaying, which was not unpleasing. It reminded me of lying on the high branches of a tree which was swaying in the wind. A most curious creaking noise puzzled me for some time. At first I thought that my box was falling apart. Then by concentrating carefully I decided that the seat thing upon which Sean sat needed oil. We came to rising ground. Sean's breath began to rasp in his throat. The pedals moved slower and slower, eventually slowing to a stop.
"The gob, heavy box you have."
"My box on the saddle, yes." It did squeak. Urged on up the hill, slowly pushing the bicycle. Stopping, he unlatched a gate, and pushed the bicycle through. There was the scrape of wood against metal, and the gate slammed shut behind us.
"What am I going into now?"
Flour came to my nostrils. I sniffed appreciatively.
"Have ye brought me, my son?"
Elderly voice.
"Herself to you, mother," replied Sean proudly.
Resting the machine against a wall, he lifted my box, carefully wiped his feet and entered a building. Down and told his mother the whole story, so far as he knew it, about me. Fumbling with the box lid he threw it back.
There was silence.
A wonderful creature she must have been in her heyday.
Look at her now, with her coat rough with neglect, her ribs showing.
'Tis a cruel shame to treat creatures so.
A sty was lifted out and set upon the floor. Disconcerting to suddenly lose one's sight. First, as I took my staggering steps, I bumped into things.
"I think we should, you know,
be intelligent cats. Very intelligent cats indeed.
Will remember I told you I had seen them in England."
"No, no, give her time, she will manage."
Sean turned to his mother. "Mother, I am going to take the box back and turn it into the supervisor in the morning, you know."
Bustled about, bringing food and water and, most necessary, leading me to a box of earth, with a promise to come in a few days' time.
Carefully locked the door and threw another lump of peat on the fire, mumbling to herself all the time in what I took to be the Irish language. Of course, language does not matter much because we converse and listen by telepathy, own language, and it is sometimes a little confusing for a French Siamese cat to sort out thought pictures framed in some other language.
He lay down to sleep, I in a box beside the fire, and the old woman on a couch at the far side of the room.
Really exhausted, yet the pain gnawing within me prevented sleep.
Madness overcame the pain, and I drifted off, terror-racked.
Come to in my dream state. Why had I to suffer so?
I feared for my kittens to come, feared that they would die at birth, feared that they would not. For what future had they?
Could I, in my weakened state, feed them? I
found the old woman stirring.
Springs creaked as she rose and came over to poke the fire.
Side me, she stroked my head and said, "'Tis myself that will be going to mass. Then we will have a bite to eat."
But her footsteps fading away down the path turned over and slept again. By the end of the day my strength had returned somewhat. I was able to move around slowly.
I bumped into almost everything, but I soon learned that furniture was not often moved.
In time I became quite adept at finding my way round without getting too many bruises.
Vibrissy, cat's whiskers, act like radar and we can find our way about in the darkest of dark nights, when there is no glimmer of light by which to see.
Now my vibrissy had to work overtime.
Later the old woman said to her son, who had called to see her, "Sean,
clean out the woodshed. I am going to keep her in there. What with her being blind, and me not seeing well either, I am afraid I may kick her and hurt the kittens, and they are worth many pounds to us. Walked out, and soon I heard a commotion from the woodshed as he moved things round and stacked up piles of peat. It is all ready, mother. I have put piles of newspapers on the floor and stopped up the window. So, once again my bed was of newspapers, Irish ones this time. 3 years ago said deliverance would come at my blackest hour, it should be almost time. The woodshed was of tarred planks with a rickety door, the floor was of beaten earth, and along the walls was stored a remarkable collection of household effects, peat slabs and empty boxes. Peculiar reason, the old woman used a truly immense padlock with which to keep the door closed. See me, she stood and muttered and fiddled endlessly with keys until she found the correct one. She would stumble in, feeling her way into the gloomy interior. Wanted to repair the window so there would be some light, no rays entered this dark hole, but as the old woman said, glass costs money, my son, glass costs money. Ere the kittens to sell, days crawled on. Water, but I was constantly in pain. Enough to keep me alive, but not enough to build up my strength. Live to give birth to my kittens, and staying alive was a struggle. Blind, ill, and always hungry, I maintained a tenuous hold of life and faith in those better days to come. A few weeks after I arrived in Ireland, I knew that soon my kittens would be born. Movement became difficult, and the pain increased. No longer could I stretch at full length, or curl into a circle. Something had happened inside me, and I could rest only sitting up, with my chest resting on something hard in order to keep weight off my lower parts. Nights later, at about midnight, really terrible pain assailed me. I screamed in agony. With immense effort, my kittens came into the world. 3 of the 5 were dead. For hours I lay gasping, my whole body as if aflame. This, I thought, was the end of my life, but no, it was not to be. To the shed in the morning and said terrible things when she found 3 dead kittens. She said such terrible things that she afterwards said a prayer for forgiveness. I thought that now, with 2 very little kittens to nurse, I would be able to go in the house where there was warmth and something more than newspapers to lie upon. Man appeared to hate me for having only 2 live kittens. He said one evening to her son, "This cat won't live more than 2 or 3 weeks. See if you can spread it around that I have 2 Siamese kittens for sale." Daily I grew weaker. I longed for death but feared for my kittens. Almost weaned, a car drew up at the gate. From my shed I could hear all. I heard the gate click open and 2 people walked up the little path. A knock at the cottage door. Seconds later it opened. A woman's voice said, "I understand you have a Siamese kitten for sale, and will ye come in?" replied the old woman. For a time there was silence, then the old woman came shambling out and grabbed one of my children. Minutes later she came back, muttering bad-temperedly, "And what would he want to be seeing you for?" She snatched me up so violently that I screamed with pain. Show of great affection she carried me into the house. Gentle voices spoke my name, and very lightly touched me and said, "We want to take the mother as well." Treated in good cat she is, and mind I read her thoughts. "Yes," she thought, "I have read all about you, you can pay plenty." She made a great fuss, saying how much she loved me and how valuable I was. How she did not want to sell me. Turned in the man's direction and said, "I'm dying, just ignore me and look after my 2 children." And turned to the old woman and said, "Did you say you had 2 kittens?" She admitted she had. So the man said, firmly, "We will take all 3 cats or none," and named a price which staggered me. But the man just said, "All right, get them ready, we will take them now," and left the room in a hurry, in order to conceal her delight and so that she could count the money again. Soon my 2 boys were placed in a very special basket which the man and the woman had brought in the back of the car, with me on her lap, and the big basket was placed on the front seat beside the man. Carefully, we drove off to get the vet to see Fifi right away. "Rab," said the man, "very sick, I'll phone as soon as we get home, he'll come today." "We let the kittens go together," said the man, "then they will not be lonely." Carefully that I felt no pain. The words of the apple tree came back to me, "You will know happiness, Fifi." Was this it? We rolled along the road for many miles, then carefully turned a sharp corner and started up a steep hill. "S," said the man, "the engine, He got out and carried away the basket containing my kittens and carefully got out, without jarring me, and carried me up 3 or 4 steps into a house. What a difference! I felt at once that I was wanted and welcome. I decided that the tree was right. So dreadfully weak. Went to a telephone and I heard her speaking to the vet that had been mentioned. The word of thanks she rang off. Coming right away, she said. Proposed to write of my operation, nor of the long struggle back to life. Suffice to say that I had a most difficult operation to remove an immense uterine tumor. I had a hysterectomy and so was free from the hardship of having babies anymore. And stayed up with me for night after night. For the operation was so severe that it was thought I would not recover. Knew differently, because now I was home, and wanted. Chapter 4. My operation was behind me. All I had to do now was to recover. Previously I had been too ill to bother WHO lived in the house or what it was like. Rishvet had said, "You must take her home and give her love. She is starved for it, and she will not live if we keep her here." Home I was taken. 2 days and nights I was kept very quiet indeed, with the man and the woman nursing me all the time and persuading me to taste the choicest food. Take it too easily, because I wanted to be persuaded. I wanted to know that they thought enough of me to take the time necessary to persuade me. A day after Mr. the Irish vet had been, the man said, "I'm going to bring in the lady Kuei," Fief out and soon returned, murmuring affectionately to someone. As they drew near he said, "Fief, this is the lady Kuei. This is Mrs. Fifi Grey Whiskers, beautiful young lady Siamese cat voice. It has been my pleasure to hear the range, power." Enthralled and wished that my poor dear mother could have heard such a voice. A sat on the bed with the man sitting between us. "The lady Kuei," she said, "but as we are going to live together you may call me Miss Kuei. You are blind, so when you are able to walk I will take you around and point out obstacles, the facilities, where you eat, etc." And in connection with that, she remarked in a self-satisfied tone, "Here we do not eat scraps, nor do we rake out the garbage. When anyone is looking, our food is purchased specially for us and is of the best quality. Now pay great attention, for I am going to brief you on the household, and I shall not say it twice." "Yes, Miss Gu," I replied humbly, "I give you my whole attention." I eased myself slightly in order to release the pressure on my stitches. "This is Howth, County Dublin," commenced Miss Gu. "We live in a house perched right on top of a cliff. The sea is 120 feet below us, straight down, so don't fall over or people will be annoyed if you should hit a fish. Maintain your dignity with visitors. Remember you are a PSC but you may romp freely with the family." "Please Miss Gu," I interjected, "what is a PSC?" "Stupid old woman cat," replied Miss Gu. "Anyone would know that PSC indicates that you are a pedigree Siamese cat, although you are not showing the intelligence expected of one." "But don't interrupt, I'm giving you the essential information." "Miss Gu, I won't interrupt you again," I answered. Sku thoughtfully scratched her ear with her foot and continued, "The man as you call him is the Lama T. Lobsang Rampa of Tibet. Stands Siamese cats as well as you and I do, so you cannot keep your thoughts from him. He is big, bearded and bald and he is nearly dead in his heart with a coronary or two. He has been very ill indeed and we all thought we would lose him." Nodded gravely, knowing what it was like to be ill. Miss Ku continued, "If you have troubles, tell him and he will help you straighten out a particular food. Tell him, he will pass on the news to Ma." "Ma, is your mother with you?" "Don't be so ridiculous, Sku," with some asperity. "Ma is Rab, the woman, you know, the one who does our shopping, cleans our tins, makes our beds, cooks for us, and lets us sleep on her bed. I'm her cat, you know." "You are the Lama's cat," said Miss Ku smugly. "Keep in this room, beside him. Tima is a bit short, nice eyes and nice ankles and a comfortable plumpness everywhere else. No bones will stick into you when you sit on her lap." For a moment, Miss Ku to recover her breath, and I to absorb the information passed to me so suddenly. Miss Ku idly played with the end of her tail and continued, "We have a young English lady living with us as one of the family. Is very tall, very thin, and has hair the color of a marmalade tom I once saw. Quite kind, though, and she will give you your dues although she does like big smelly dogs and screaming children." "Okay," said the Lama, "Fief has to rest. You can tell her some more later." Miss Gu and carried her out of the room. I lay on his bed, purring with contentment. No more scraps. I'd always thought I would like to have something bought specially for me, to be wanted. That had been my ambition throughout the long lean years. I was wanted, very much so. Contentedly and dropped off to sleep.